Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hi, this is Henry Gilroy, co-executive producer of Star Wars Rebels. You're listening to Aggressive Negotiations.
Welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, coming at you from Lothal, pirating the signal off the Empire. That's right, we are excited to be here. You know you're in the only place where you can get great Star Wars talk and nothing but Star Wars love each and every week. And I am one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing. And with me, as he is always, the beautifully bold and wonderfully talented Master John Mills.
Wow, thank you. That's high praise. Nobody has ever called me bald before. So that's very it's very flattering. Thank you, Matt. Oh, wait, no, it's the other one. Whatever. Anyway, I'm glad to be here. Hi, everybody.
Oh, man, that's great. we have a really exciting show for you. But before we dive into that, we have sad news. We never heard back from the winner of our review contest, and, well, we did give them quite a bit of time to get back to us, and so, well, we figured it was only fair to go back to the old random.org number generator and see what we can pull up as another winner. So, I've got everything in here, John. We're ready to go, and, I mean, I don't know. How about I hit that button?
Do it.
Okay. Oh, 13. All right.
Lucky number 13.
That's lucky right. 13. And I'm looking at the list here.
Who's number 13?
That winner is Glitch FTW.
Glitch That's right. FTW. Glitch That's FTW. Right. You are the winner. Surprise.
That's right.
You
You're
won.
The lucky winner. Yeah. Over on iTunes, that's your name, is Glitch FTW. Please go over to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose a show, choose Aggressive Negotiations, and send us your contact information and your address, and we will send out your prizes. So thank you so much for everybody that reviewed us. Now, if you would like to help out the show, just like everybody in our review contest, go over to iTunes and make sure you hit us up with a star rating review. We'll read you out on the show, whatever you said about the show. And we really appreciate everybody who has gone and done that for us. It's meant a lot, and it really has. It's helped the show grow. You can find us all over the place, though, wherever you get your podcast. So it doesn't have to be just something like iTunes. Any podcatcher, just type in Aggressive Negotiation, subscribe, and you'll start getting the episodes. You can also find us on Twitter. We're at The Jedi Masters, the show account. Please do follow us there. Interact with us. We love talking to you. We've got the entire network on Twitter, as well as at Join Nerd Party. So if you would like to interact with everything that's going on here in the Nerd Party Network, you'll want to check out that. And you'll be able to see all the different shows that are coming out as well. Plus, we've got the website there at thenerdparty.com. And, of course, we are also on Facebook, which is facebook.com/thenerdparty. Like us over there, and you can, again, you'll be able to see everything that's coming out. You'll be able to interact with us as we post shows there. We also post some news there. So, yeah, check all of that out. But, John, I think, you know, after all of that, I think it's time for you to hit me with your best shot.
Yes.
Why don't you hit me with your best shot?
Watch it. You're going to get some force away. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just had to get that in there. I'm just trolling John.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Messing with a Sith Lord. I mean, Jedi Master. No, you know, there was a question that came up that it hit me. I was discussing with a friend recently, you know, some different thematics with the Star Wars films, naturally. And a question that occurred to me, and this is a starting point. I know that this discussion is going to go into some interesting places, because we were talking about some things and it got back to a certain point in The Empire Strikes Back. And the question that occurred to me was, given that Yoda who, of course, said, you know, be cautious of the future, that always in motion it is. But given that Yoda could also see events that could unfurl in the future, why did he not more actively try to stop Luke from leaving Dagobah? Now, I have some answers in my head. I have some stuff. But that's where I want to start with this, is asking you, why was he not more proactive, for lack of a better term, in terms of making it so that Luke couldn't leave?
I wonder if it has to do with the training of another Skywalker and the constant rebuffing of Anakin of doing what he wanted to do. And in many ways, you know, then Anakin keeps what he wants to do a secret, and it leads to destruction. And so I wonder if this is not a place where Yoda has grown and feels as though I can stop. He could stop Luke from going. There's no way Yoda could not stop him from going. I mean, he's a Jedi Master. If he doesn't want Luke to go, Luke doesn't have to leave. It won't leave. But I think that Yoda is allowing Luke to leave because he realizes Luke needs to learn this lesson. And it's not up to Yoda at that point to make that decision for him. He must allow Luke to make the choices that he will make, and those choices will then define what he can do next. And I also think that, you know, obviously Yoda is very aware that Leia exists and could be taught as well. So it not all is lost if, you know, Luke does not make it. But I really do think it comes down to him learning that lesson, maybe, that, you know, the Jedi hadn't quite learned in the prequel trilogy, was that failure is an important lesson. So he needs Luke to learn the lesson of failure here and what he's capable of and maybe what he's ready for on his own, you know. And we see a penitent Luke come back in Return of the Jedi saying, I wasn't ready. I'm sorry. You know, he admits his mistake. And so not only does it teach Luke humility, but I also think it also allows Luke to admit his failings to himself, and that I think makes Luke a better man in the end. By the end of the original trilogy,
I agree with you about choice. That you know, Yoda is about being hands off. In a sense, this is just another Jedi test for Luke. What are you going to decide to do at this moment? And you know, so you chose to go into the cave with your blaster and your lightsaber. And look how that turned out. And here's another test for you. And so the whole thing becomes a big test. And so, of course, Yoda absolutely would be willing to let Luke go and make his own choice. A layer on it, though, that would be presented as a counterpoint is if Yoda sees the potential horror of Luke turning to the dark side, sure, there is another. We can train another. But Luke turning to the dark side and going off with Vader at that moment would be an horrific thing to happen for the entire galaxy. So in a sense, what is it that makes Yoda willing to gamble the whole galaxy on Luke? I think we have an answer with the Clone Wars, with Yoda's larger view of things coming out of that. And the Clone Wars series, we talked about the Yoda arc a couple episodes ago. But do you think that there's any sense of it being an irresponsible act on Yoda's part to gamble the galaxy on Luke's decision?
No. And the reason I say that is because, you know, one of the failings of the Jedi Order in the prequel trilogy, where they had gone wrong, is that they had become much too reliant on dogma and, you know, kind of almost this cookie cutter by the rules type of thinking, instead of allowing themselves to be more in tune with the Force and allowing it to flow and to move and to work its will you know? And I think Yoda here is very much, you know, he's spent all this time waiting. And I think at this moment, obviously, we see, you know, he says, you know, matters are worse. But at the same time, he's got to believe that holding Luke here is not the answer either, because I think what that would make Luke into would, I think, be somebody who he wouldn't be ready to really truly learn. I mean, again, you need Luke, if he's going to come back to you, to be ready to fully open himself up.
If you love a Jedi, set them free. If they love you back, they'll return.
Exactly, pretty much. Yeah.
I think this is important, though, because there is a wisdom that Yoda has. Even if we subtract the Yoda arc from the Clone Wars, I think it's very apparent here that Yoda is at a point where, again, he says always in motion is the future. Nothing's certain. We can't be sure. Even if Luke turns, he doesn't know how that's going to play out, and he doesn't believe that it's the end of everything. That things, you know, on a long enough timeline, things naturally adjust themselves. And so I think it's that wisdom that he winds up passing on to Luke. When Luke survives his test and comes back, Luke has that wisdom about the uncertainty of the future, and you can't be sure. I mean, Palpatine makes the exact same mistake in Return of the Jedi that prompts Luke to fly off to Cloud City. I've seen the future, and I'm sure of how it's going to happen. I know what's going to happen, so I'm not worried about it, as opposed to taking the correct view, which is, this is possible, but I don't know how it's gonna wash out. And so going forward with that, though, the way I wound up getting to this point is, doesn't that, and I'm not opening this up as a criticism, but I want to try to work past. I think one of the biggest things I've had to work past, tried to work past with where Luke's journey takes him in the future, is the fact that he's gotten that lesson about not trusting too much in a vision of the future. So what is it possibly that the saga, coming at it from a positive angle, what can we possibly take away from where Luke's journey goes in the future? It's an interesting one, isn't it? The whole reason I bring it up is because I think that, like a lot of people who have tried to noodle this through, there are a couple of hurdles here. And it's one of those things as well where I then wound up going down, and this is sort of a parallel sort of thing, but Obi-Wan goes and tries to talk to Vader and talk him off the ledge before their fight. And Luke goes and talks to Vader before their fight to try to talk him back. Is there a piece of the puzzle that we're missing? Would it alleviate some of the challenges we've had if we found out that Luke had in some way reached out to Ben for that echo? Do you think that that would have made the story in The Last Jedi work in better conjunction with the previous films if we had some sort of notion that Luke had tried to talk to Ben before we met up with him again?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think one of the things is that there is a good point. They had many conversations about things. And unfortunately, we don't know. You know, we have no idea what their relationship was like, really. All we know is pretty much Leia kind of throwing him to Luke and being like, here, you take him. And create an order while you're at it. You know, Luke not being necessarily all that excited about the idea. And so I'm fascinated because I think that's a great question. It would be really interesting to see what kind of conversations Luke and, you know, Ben had and where those had gone. Because I do think that you raising that issue about you know, what Yoda thought and the lessons then that Luke learns through that. I mean, it makes it very difficult then to watch what happens in The Last Jedi and feel like it makes narrative sense when Luke seems to have, in many ways, we would have thought he would have learned that lesson.
Right. He seems to have regressed. But then, as I thought about Luke reaching out to him, I realized that we all fans, very much make this mistake of staying very relegated to looking at it from within a certain lens. We've now had it established that Leia was in full faculty of some semblance of her Force powers. You know, we can tell that she sensed Han's death. She saves herself from certain death in space. Would it alleviate the arc if she had reached out and tried to talk? Do you think things go differently if she had gone and tried to talk to Ben? We see that Ben is very hesitant to pull the trigger in The Last Jedi. So is it, did she try to reach out to him?
It seems very much like both Han and Leia had done their best to try and reach their son. And that, I don't know if it had fallen on deaf ears or they weren't feeling like they were making a connection, and they thought maybe, you know, Luke would be able to make a better connection because, you know, Kylo is so strong in the Force and, you know, I guess train the dark side out of him or something. And I'm struggling because it's one of those places like there's just so much open space. And so I'm wondering, you know, maybe, and Leia does, you know, she comes back and blames herself, you know, and the Force Awakens, saying it's my fault for not trying harder, and for sending him away. And I think the thing that is most fascinating would be to see what were the family dynamics? What was the family dynamic with Uncle Luke? What was the dynamic then with this character named Snoke? And how did this all work together to culminate with a boy becoming so unhinged as what we see in, you know, The Last Jedi, where he's just yelling about, you know, more, you know, like really, I mean, Kylo's just unhinged. He's crazy. So what is it that drives him crazy? Is it the dark side that's driving him crazy in some ways, that he can't handle the raw dark side power in the same way that, like, a Palpatine was able to? You know, Palpatine seems to have no problems with the dark side. Maybe Kylo just can't handle the dark side, really, and it's actually driving him crazy.
Well, do we see, because, you know, we're all very still locked into the whole idea of the Sith. Maybe you're onto something, that there's too much power flowing through Kylo at that point. Part of the rule of two with the Sith even was, you know, we've got to keep things, it's too much for one person to handle all of what's going through us. But I don't know. I mean, I still come back to Yoda on Dagobah letting Luke make his mistake. Obi-Wan letting Anakin make his mistakes and looking the other way through a lot of mistakes over time. Is it possible that we could come at it from the angle of Luke had learned about their regrets with letting Anakin get away with things, and that's why that colored his decision, his split second of doubt when he saw Ben's future?
It's possible. I mean, it would be very interesting to see what it is that Luke learned about the, you know, the Jedi from that time period, and of course, revolving around his father, you know, what the Jedi had done with Anakin. And it makes me wonder a little bit, does Luke fall into some sort of the same trap of treating Kylo different because he's quote-unquote special, you know, because he's a Skywalker? or at least has that blood flowing through him. You know, what is it that, or is it that Luke is not doing that and Snoke is the one on the other side feeding him that, that you're special, you're a Skywalker, you know? And that's what causes, you know, Kylo to kind of completely retreat from what Luke is teaching him, because what Snoke is giving him is the quick and easy path, you know, to being what he wants to be, which is feeding that whole side of him, that whole bit of darkness that has been apparently there for a long time. And he just finds a way to stoke those fires and stoke the fires of, you know, self-importance and self-centeredness and selfishness and all of the things that make you, you know, basically into a good dark side user, because it's all about you. And, you know, in the end, sadly, what we see, at least in The Last Jedi, is really what we've created is just a petulant brat, not really a powerful Sith Lord.
But here's a thought as well. There's a very big structural thing that seems to alleviate a lot of blame away from Ben and put it towards Snoke. Almost like everybody's to blame for Ben but Ben. Leia blames herself, Luke blames himself, Han blames himself, Snoke takes credit, I guess you could say. With Anakin, the lesson with Anakin was always, it didn't, you know, yeah, Palpatine was there. Yeah, these things were happening, but Anakin was still ultimately responsible for his own decision making. Do you think that there is a missed opportunity here, that if Snoke hadn't been in the equation, or Snoke hadn't been a Force user, had simply been somebody who could, you know, talk to Ben and manipulate him mentally without the Force, do you think that part of what is missing for us is a sense of Ben's responsibility for his actions, that it feels like there's too much of a shift away from his own responsibility?
I wonder if it has anything to do with maybe just a cultural change. You know, I mean, from the time that the, you know, even the prequels came out to now, the way that, you know, the culture seems to kind of view those things. And I wonder if that has anything to do with the fact that we don't talk about Kylo's responsibility. We talk about everybody else's responsibility around him. And in the end, you know, Kylo is responsible for Kylo.
Right.
You know, Ben is responsible for his choices. And I think it's the problem. We don't know about Ben's choices. We have no clue what Ben's choices were. We have absolutely no idea. All we have to go on is what everybody else did. We don't really know what Ben did, other than that he went with Snoke after what happened. He burned down the Jedi Temple, killed some younglings, and took the rest with him. That's the only decision we know. We don't know about Ben's decisions before that. And so if maybe we did, we might, you know, put more blame on him. But I still think, you know, yeah, he's still to blame. I mean, he chooses to react the way he does to his uncle. He chooses the way he reacts to that happening, in the sense that, you know, he burns it all down. He kills people and then he leaves. I mean, you know. That's a really interesting thing, because we just don't know too much about Ben and who he is before that, except for, you know, the 2-year-old running around Uncle Wando and, you know, last shot.
And it's interesting, because I honestly think that there are some threads here that, and I think this is what a lot of people need to keep in mind too, because we're sitting here and we're coming at it from all of these angles. And I think that something that gets lost in the debates sometimes is that we all want to get there. We're all trying to get there. Well, maybe not all of us. Maybe some people are just jerks, but most of us are sitting there. We're trying to get there with it. We're trying to work our way through. And so there is a lot of both hope and trepidation transferred onto episode 9 before we even see a single frame of it, of this has really got to make everything mesh together. But just as sort of a final question, because I've seen a lot of stuff about this. Yoda lets Luke go. We talked about that. We have no idea if they saw any potential. They didn't see any potential redemptive arc for Vader. Luke was the one that saw that path. Rey saw a redemptive path for Ben that Luke didn't see. If Rey has already had the reason to believe in a redemption for him taken away, have we closed the door on redemption for the Skywalker line at this point? Do you see in episode 9 a way out for Ben from the darkness?
I think this is the hardest question about this because, you know, and it's been said many times in many ways. If Ben is redeemed, it feels like just a repeat of what we did in, you know, the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite unsatisfying, I think. So it has led me to think that, you know, possibly the answer is that Ben is not redeemed. And then, of course, that begs the question, so what does that mean for the Skywalker line? And you know, and then you have to ask the question, okay, well, then is Rey somehow a part of that that we don't know about yet? And all those kind of things. Because I don't think you want to end this trilogy with the Skywalkers turning out to be utter failures. And so that the wrap-up of the trilogy, you know, the entire saga is, yeah, well, we finally had to come in and fix that Skywalker mess. Because, again, that's something that ruins the entire series, honestly. And so how do you find a way around that? Oh, wow. I mean, I honestly think in many ways, you know, that JJ has his work cut out for him, because that is a very tough hole to dig out of.
And yeah.
I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I really don't. What do you think? Because I find myself at a substantial loss as to how you do that. I mean, and not just have it feel like you're repeating what's been done.
I almost feel like this is this conversation has gone down a road where I really regret not having gone and or participated in the episode 9 speculation panel at Dragon Con, because what I see as the path for wrapping this up in such a way that it doesn't feel repetitive, but at the same time doesn't feel completely burned out, or not finding quite the right term for that, is I think they need to go full tilt making Ben / Kylo pitiable on the scale of when Gollum... Okay, if anybody hasn't seen
read
The Lord of the Rings, fast forward for about the next 3 minutes, okay? Just trust me on that. I do not want to blow the end of The Lord of the Rings. I know it may seem crazy to be like, oh, how can you blow the end of The Lord of the Rings? I don't want to be responsible for that. So,
right, that would be uncool.
Start fast forwarding now for about 3 minutes. We'll make this part fast. I think that the way you need to make it is he needs to be pitiable, like when Gollum falls into Mount Doom at the end of Lord of the Rings. He's evil. He's not redeemed. But at the same time, you feel sad for him because you're like, oh, if only he had a better way. He really got screwed.
I think you have a point there. I think that would definitely create a path to allowing you to care about, you know, whether or not he was able to get out of the hole he had dug himself in. And so I think that's good. And that's probably one of the smartest ideas I've heard yet on how to do this. And I don't... Do you do that where you kind of go down the road where maybe I mentioned, you know, he feels a little bit just like he's insane? And that's the pull you turn towards, like that the dark side has kind of, you know, Dave Filoni has used the Lord of the Rings stuff, so that the dark side has corrupted him in much the way that the ring corrupted Gollum.
mm-hmm.
so that there's a desire to be better, but he's just too far gone. He's too drunk on the dark side to be able to make that change, Michael Jackson style. So
is he just bad like Michael Jackson?
Because he's bad. He's bad. You know it. Wow, this is a really music-heavy episode.
It is.
But I think I think you have a real point in that, and that could be the best way to possibly bring Kylo around, in the sense that, like, by the end of it, you make it better. Now, it still does beg the question, I think, of how is the Skywalker line just not a failure in a way that leaves you feeling so unfulfilled and unsatisfied?
Well, I think that takes us into the realm of transitioning the story from the big mythological thing to the particular real life echo. And maybe that is the goal, is to gear shift into that. So that maybe that is what gives this series more longevity, is they bring it from the big mythos that it was into, and they have a pathway toward a more Marvel approach to their heroes and villains. More of everyday you and me sort of outlook on the people, as opposed to the big mythic proportions that are going on. And maybe this is part of that gear shift. I don't know. It is all going to depend on what impulses they follow for episode 9. And I know that I will go to whatever is in my future wondering about the original script for episode 9, no matter what. And the only way you can satisfy me as a Star Wars fan is fine, wait until episode 9 is out, but I want to read what Trevorrow was going to do. I got to know what they were going to do.
You know, I think for me, the thing that really fascinates me in this is the box that I see JJ being in, and how does he work himself out of the box? You know, JJ's a master of creating the box,
mm-hmm.
but he is not necessarily always been responsible for getting you out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
How he and Terrio are able to do that is going to be fascinating to me. And I think with the question that we asked about whether or not and how you deal with Kylo and you deal with this whole idea of the Skywalker line and everything, I do think that this movie needs to be able to recapture that Return of the Jedi feeling from the end. You want it to feel like a triumph. You want to feel like it wraps up with a bow on it. I think George 100% understood what he was doing when no major characters died, and you felt such a sense of joy and relief after you saw Return of the Jedi for the first time.
Or for the thousandth.
Yeah, or that everything is going to be okay in the world. And, you mentioned, do we go to a more Marvel-type place where we bring our heroes more down to Earth? And I hope they don't go that route, because I do feel like that one of the things that makes Star Wars special is that sense that it truly does give us something to inspire us and to aspire to, because of that mythological sense of where it comes from, the storytelling and the structure, and that those heroes are meant to be inspiring. I think back to, Dragon Con, and, Christy Golden talking on the authors panel about how much Luke Skywalker had meant to her and how much Luke Skywalker had taught her in the original trilogy. And I think, we want then this generation to have that as well, in the same way that I think you could, look at the way that the Clone Wars generation growing up with Ahsoka and all that they learned from her and those kind of things. Each generation has had its own Star Wars here. So this Star Wars does, if it wants to stand the test of time with the rest of what's been created in Star Wars, it needs to find a way to do that in the mythological sense. And I'm going to be fascinating to see how that happens. Now, I'll throw out a huge caveat here. I think that Chris Terrio is a scriptwriter, has the ability to do that. For me, loving Batman v Superman and what he was able to do, I thought thematically with that film and what he is doing with those big mythological figures was fascinating. I know everybody doesn't agree with me, but that gives me hope that he can pull that off with JJ here in episode 9. So, I'm not a doomsdayer in this. I still have hope that it'll turn out well. Rebellions are built on it. So
that's right. That's right. We can have episode 9, Another New Hope. There you go.
The next new hope.
The next new hope. This conversation, I think, has gone in a lot of interesting directions from a simple little question at the beginning. If people want to continue discussing Ben or Yoda or any of the things that we talked about this week, where can they find you online?
Well, they could find me on Twitter, MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram under the same name. You can also find me here on the network with Drea Kaufman as we talk about Harry Potter each and every week over on Outpost, one chapter at a time. It's a lot of fun. We're actually almost through The Goblet of Fire. It's been a great series so far, and we're excited to finish that one. And it's definitely been the biggest book, obviously, of the series so far, but then we'll dive into the Order of the Phoenix. It's just been a lot of fun. So if you love Harry Potter, or you've just gotten into it, or maybe you never have, join us. You can start from the beginning anytime. It's the great thing about this podcast. You can jump in at any time and anywhere, really. You can also find me over on the Trek FM network. I do The Orb with Chris Jones talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And then I do a little show called the 602 Club, which is just a local watering hole for fans to stop by and hear about all things geeky. We like to try and cover as many fandoms as possible, so I hope you'll check that out. And then last but not least, hanging out with my good friend Courtney on Cinema Stories as we talk about films through the lens of faith. Now, John, enough of me prattling on about places to find me. Where can people find you?
Very few places, actually, as it turns out, Matt. You can find me as Kessel Junkie online, usually on Twitter, blah, blah, blah. But seriously, KESSELJUNKIE. You can also find me, trolling around, sometimes appearing on 602 Club, sometimes appearing on Filibuster here on the network, and currently retooling Great Shot Kid. I did have the pleasure of appearing over on the Talk Film Society with Brandon Shea Matala and Zach Moore to discuss some of the Halloween movies in their H40 or H40 podcast. So you can check that out if you like Halloween in specific, because our discussions got rather spirited from time to
time. Well, and you've talked me into watching Halloween.
Yes.
So 602 Club coming up here in October. So be on the lookout for that, because I don't know how you talk. This shows you how much I like you as a person, I guess.
I'll be interested if you still like me afterward, because Halloween left some very deep scars. I think I clung to Star Wars as strongly as I did because Halloween screwed me up so badly. But with all of that said, Matt, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
Negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.